Meet Lauren. The character is fictional. The experience is shared by people across Yorkshire and the Humber today. This is their story. In Wakefield and Rothwell, NHS workforce development has stalled while wards struggle with staffing shortages and would-be healthcare workers cannot access training places. Empty classrooms sit alongside unmet demand for nursing programmes, creating a gap between the people who want to serve and the communities that need them. Here is what Lauren found when she tried to bridge that gap.
I've wanted to be a nurse since I was 14. My gran had a stroke that year, and I watched the ward staff at Pinderfields Hospital help her relearn how to speak, how to hold a cup, how to trust her left arm again. They were patient and skilled and kind, and I knew that was the work I wanted to do. I finished my A-levels at Castleford Academy while working part-time at Maple Lodge Care Home in town. The residents there called me their little nurse, because I was always the one they asked for when they needed help with medication times or felt worried about a pain. When I turned 26, I felt ready. I had 3 years of care experience, good grades, and my mum finally felt confident managing my brother Jake's autism support routines without me there every evening. I applied to the University of Huddersfield's nursing programme in 2022. The admissions tutor, Sarah Williams, called me in for an interview and said I was exactly the kind of candidate they wanted. Local, experienced, committed to staying in the region after qualifying. She walked me through the course structure, showed me the simulation ward where students practice procedures, and talked about placement opportunities at Calderdale and Huddersfield NHS Foundation Trust. 2 weeks later, she called me back. "Lauren, I'm really sorry," she said. "You meet all our academic requirements, and your interview was excellent, but there are no funded places available this year. Health Education England has told us their budget cannot support additional cohorts." I asked what that meant. "It means the money isn't there," she explained. "The Treasury sets the training budget, and they've said there's no funding for extra nurses, even though we know the wards need them." I thought that sounded reasonable. Budgets exist for a reason. Money has to come from somewhere. I tried Leeds Beckett University next. The admissions coordinator, Mark Thompson, was sympathetic but clear. "We can offer you a place, but it would be self-funded. That's £9,250 per year for 3 years, plus living costs." I did the maths. Even with a part-time job, I'd need nearly £40,000 to complete the course. My mum works checkout shifts at Asda, and we're still paying off Jake's assessment costs from when he was diagnosed. I couldn't ask my family to carry that debt. Mark suggested I try the apprenticeship route instead. "The NHS Trust sometimes run healthcare assistant programmes that lead into nursing," he said. "You get paid while you learn, and they often fast-track you to registered nurse status afterwards." That sounded perfect. I applied to work as a healthcare assistant at Pinderfields Hospital, hoping to access their internal training schemes. The learning and development team invited me in for an assessment. Linda Carter, who ran workforce development, was encouraging. "You'd be ideal for our apprenticeship programme," she said. "We've had brilliant success rates with people who start as healthcare assistants and work up to registered nurses. It takes longer than university, but you earn while you learn, and you really understand the wards by the time you qualify." The next week, she called me back. "I'm afraid I have to withdraw that offer," she said. "NHS England has reduced our workforce development funding. We've had to suspend the apprenticeship scheme indefinitely. There is no funding to run new cohorts." I asked when it might restart. "We don't know," she said. "The budget has been cut, and we're waiting to see if it gets restored next fiscal year." I contacted Mid Yorkshire Teaching NHS Foundation Trust directly, thinking maybe they had different arrangements. The HR manager, David Richardson, explained that all NHS trusts in the region were facing the same issue. The training budgets come from NHS England, and they've been told by the Treasury to reduce spending on workforce development, he said. "We cannot afford to run programmes that aren't centrally funded. It's not a local decision, it's national policy." That phrase kept coming up. "There is no funding." Everyone said it with the same resigned tone, as though it explained everything and ended the conversation. But 3 months later, I had to go back to the University of Huddersfield campus to collect some paperwork from my rejected application. I parked near the nursing school and walked past the building where Sarah Williams had shown me the simulation wards. The ground floor was dark. The first floor was dark. I could see into the second floor through tall windows, rows of empty classrooms, unused equipment covered with dust sheets, teaching spaces that looked like they hadn't seen students in months. I asked the security guard at the front desk if the building was closed for refurbishment. "No," he said. "They just don't run as many courses anymore. Used to be buzzing here. Day courses, evening courses, weekend workshops for qualified staff wanting to specialise. All stopped when the funding was cut. Shame, really. All this kit just sitting there." I stood outside that building for 20 minutes, looking at those empty floors. The classrooms existed. The equipment existed. Sarah Williams still worked there. I could see her office light on. Students like me existed, ready to learn. The wards at Pinderfields still needed nurses. I knew that because my gran was back in there with a chest infection and the staff looked exhausted. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? The building was already built. The lecturers were already employed. The students were already qualified to start. The only thing missing was someone saying, "Yes, you can use these rooms to teach these people these skills." The government that prints every pound note had decided not to issue enough of them to connect willing students to empty classrooms to understaffed wards. That wasn't an accounting problem. That was a choice. I still haven't given up. I work full-time at the care home now, and I keep checking for new training opportunities. But I understand something now that I didn't understand when I started this journey 3 years ago. When they said there is no money, they meant the people who control the money had decided not to spend it. The Treasury that creates every pound in existence told me it couldn't find enough pounds to train the nurses that Yorkshire desperately needs. The resources were all there. The teachers, the buildings, the students, the wards that need us. Someone just decided they weren't worth connecting. That's not about money running out. That's about priorities. And now I know this isn't just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people want to serve and communities need help. But someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare while the printing press sits idle.
What Lauren experienced has a name: impossible expectations. This technique demands perfect outcomes and zero waste before committing public resources to training or employment programs, a standard never applied to tax cuts or corporate subsidies. A false analogy is like comparing a goldfish bowl to the Pacific Ocean. Because both contain water, it ignores the crucial difference in scale and function. For decades, politicians have applied this same flawed reasoning to government budgets, treating the Treasury like a household that must save before it spends. But households don't issue their own currency. Governments do. Every time Lauren heard there is no funding, officials were demanding impossible guarantees. Would every nursing student complete the course? Would every graduate remain in the NHS for their full career? Would the training produce exactly the right specialisms in exactly the right locations? Unless the answer was a perfect yes to every question, the programme was deemed unaffordable. Yet when banks needed bailouts in 2008, no one demanded proof of zero future risk. When corporation tax was cut, no one required guarantees of job creation. The impossible expectation standard applies only to public investment that serves working people. The UK government issues its own currency and does not need to find pounds before spending them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Wakefield and Rothwell, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Wakefield and Rothwell ranks 170 out of 543 English constituencies by deprivation. English Indices of Deprivation 20-25, MHCLG. The constituency has 1956 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £37.8 million in total grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.